Hey, VBackLink family, it's Lily, and I was wondering if I could ask you a really quick favor. If the VBackLink has ever helped you, encouraged you, or taught you something along your birth after cesarean journey, I would be so grateful if you would vote for us for Best Podcast in NoCo Style's Best of NoCo Awards. As a Northern Colorado born and raised mama myself, this is especially meaningful for me. It takes less than a minute to vote, and we've linked it right in the show notes. Every vote helps more families discover the VBackLink, bringing more awareness to VBack education and support. Thank you so much for cheering on our little team. We appreciate you more than you know. So go to the show notes, click the link to vote, and then come back to this episode for another incredible episode.
Hi, friends. If anyone is watching, it's us. It's VBackLink. We are, if you haven't been following along all weekend, we've been together all weekend long.
Yay,
so fun.
It's not a weekend yet.
It's like actually, I've been calling it weekend, but yeah, I know it's been all week.
It's a midweek weekend.
It's a midweek weekend.
That's the VBackLink retreat.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got both our founders here, and then myself and Paige, who just had to step out and talk to her kiddo. But
and Ashley.
And our Ashley, who was here earlier. So you've got the most of the VBackLink that you're ever going to get. So if you have questions about VBack, we do our Q&A once a month now, and it's saved in the highlight, but this is an extra fun one.
If you're watching, give us a wave. Drop your favorite emojis.
Yes.
I love seeing people's favorite emojis. Mine is the heart eyes emojis, but also the one that's like this app picture, like, bleh.
Mine is the squiggle, the swirls for eyes.
And oh,
that is my favorite emoji.
Yeah. Let's get some questions going. It can really be, let's do VBack questions, but also it can be really about anything. If you want to know, what do you want to know about us? Yeah. What do you want to know about the VBack think? What we're up to? Who we are? Maybe some of you guys are new and you don't know who we are.
Yeah, maybe you don't know who I am. Yeah.
Who are these old people sitting on our couch?
Dude.
And how? You keep calling yourself old.
Oh, that's how old I am.
Oh, we.
You can't have me.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBackLink podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBack.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBackLink is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
23 months. Self-care by me. Okay, due in October. Here we got a question.
What?
And my doctor mentioned that he would want to induce me at 39 weeks. I am nervous. Okay, I have a question for you. Has your doctor mentioned why he wants to induce at 39 weeks? Because it's June now. And October is quite a ways away.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of like medical conditions that would warrant a 39 week induction that you can know at this time. However, there are a few. So there's a concern, and really it's hard to say without knowing your medical history and knowing right. All those things. But if he wants to induce you at 39 weeks just because he thinks there's a higher chance of you having a vaginal birth, then that's not evidence-based information. It might be a good idea to start asking questions about why, what does he hope to solve by the 39 week induction? What has he seen in your healthcare that would warrant an induction, or if he just wants to do it because for convenience, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Someone else asked, are inductions and Pitocin more risky for VBAC? The answer is yes. In our world, I think all of us would stand on the same page and say that we would recommend avoiding induction unless it becomes medically necessary.
Correct.
That is because there are risks that are increased, particularly with Pitocin. Pitocin increases your risk of uterine rupture when it is used specifically at really high doses, and like we're upping the dose pretty quickly. Low and slow Pitocin is a safe VBAC induction method when a medically necessary induction happens. However, we do know that risks are increased. So if we can avoid that, That's our like gold standard. But when that induction becomes possible,
it is still slight, a small risk. It's still very slight, but it's still very much there.
Yeah. For reference, ACOG mentions that your risk of uterine rupture is 0.5 to 0.9%. So just under 1%. And with Pitocin, it's about 1.4% on the study that I cite most commonly.
Mm-hmm. Ashley Mark, wish you were here.
We love you, Ashley. She said,
love that you're doing this. What fun.
Aww, I love you.
We went to dinner with Ashley and she gave
us a little bit. Yes. Guys, can you scoot it slightly this way?
But yes.
Are you not in it?
I'm barely.
Okay, so I want to, this is a comment in the feedback community. If you guys don't know, we have a private group on Facebook that you can go to, and it's in a phenomenal community. It says, previous CPD reducing chances of VBAC. They were reviewing the labor and delivery notes, which I love that you got, by the way. Little tip, if you haven't gotten your op reports yet, you should request them and see what they said about things in your cesarean op reports. Said, learned that I actually did dilate to 6 centimeters. She thought she was only dilated to 4 centimeters after 4 hours of not progressing. They stopped PIT due to baby's heart rate decelerating, and after long intense contractions needing TURB, and then it ended up in a cesarean with a diagnosis of CPD.
Okay, but time out. I have a little thing. I wonder if they told her she was 4, and I wonder if she really was 4, because it can't technically be failure to progress unless it's 6 centimeters and it's been 4 hours. So it might have been something that they miswrote in her notes to diagnose her with.
That is something. Interesting thoughts.
Anyways, that was
it. But yeah, it's true. I said he also noted that my baby was OP after the C-section, so that's probably why he didn't descent. He was 6 pounds, 15 ounces at birth. Will this reduce my chances of VBAC? And I'm currently pregnant and I'm 10 months postpartum.
Where's the pelvis?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Get that.
It's over there. It's right there.
Yes. 5 feet and 117 pounds pre-pregnancy, if that matters. Will it reduce the chances of VBAC? I personally was told that I had CPD and I would never get a baby out of my pelvis ever.
And CPD, to define that, is like small pelvis.
Basically. Small pelvis. Yeah. Cephalopelvic distortion. So will it reduce your chances of VBAC? It's hard to say, but I'm going to say no.
But I also would say that it's really, truly so rare to have CPD.
It is.
You cannot diagnose CPT during CPD. You can't diagnose it during a C-section. You can't say, oh, your pelvis looks too small. You have to have a pelvic telemetry exam. It's like a special kind of x-ray. Like most of the time when people are diagnosed with CPD, during birth, it's because it's an incorrect diagnosis. You don't generally do it.
And telemetry itself is not super evidence-based. Like there's not many OBs that will even do it because then they'll also like slap CPD on a diagnosis, which is
frustrating. Easily.
So Paige was pointing out in this that like up in this whole thing, it was talking about actually that the baby's heart rate was having decelerations and they were having to do terbutaline and things like that. It looks to me more like maybe baby was having heart decelerations. That was more of the cause rather than her pelvis was really too small.
But then they added on
OP
and positioning. So
okay,
so let me show you this. This is your pelvis, right? We all have a pelvis. Your pelvis is dynamic. Your pelvis is not a static bone. It shifts and it moves and it rocks. So if we like lift up one of our legs, it lifts up the side of our pelvis. And if we lift up this leg, it lifts the side of this pelvis. Your pelvis can also shift back and forth, side to side. We even can do a hip squeeze from the top and like open up the bottom of your pelvis with a hip squeeze. I've even seen a midwife use her hands inside of someone's vagina during her birth, which is not something that's super common, but she had a really prominent pelvic bone and she was holding open her pelvis. So our pelvis moves. It's dynamic. It is not static. And so what all of us really have seen as doulas is that what matters the most is how often you can move. How are you changing positions? Are you optimizing movement before you get an epidural? Are you able to move around and flex around? And when we say move, I think it's important to know, or like when we say change positions, it's not like, okay, great, I changed position and now I'm here. This is not as helpful as like, can I sway side to side? Can I do cat cows? And here I am like on a table in an Airbnb doing really silly things.
Get it.
Woo! But your pelvis is dynamic. And I think that answers part of the other part of that question about wanting to be induced at 39 weeks because you're tiny. Small people and small stature, you're in good company with Paige and I. We're tiny-ish people.
We sit next to each other.
Yeah, we're both. We're really excited because we're the same height.
Yeah.
But
I'm 5 feet.
And I'm 5'1". And
thing
is like, you're in good company and babies can be born vaginally. Your stature has no indicator of if you can or cannot birth a baby vaginally. What we would say is, I think what's most important is optimizing movement, getting your pelvis to move, having a doula with you to help suggest some of those position changes, because it's hard for you to expect to be the expert in all of this and memorize all this stuff without being a doula yourself. You can't doula yourself in labor. It's why even as doulas, we have doulas.
I've tried. Okay, next question. Paige, you have to answer this one. How do you prevent prom and choreo, and is it likely to happen again?
So prom is premature rupture of membranes for anyone watching that doesn't know.
And that happens in only about 10% of labors.
Yeah.
And with prom, it's very unlikely for that to happen again, although it does, as we know with Megan. Mm-hmm. And that's actually happened to me multiple times, but it also has not. Like, that's how two of my labors started, and then two of them didn't.
I think you're pointing to using our calcium.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Vitamin C.
Vitamin C.
It helps strengthen the sac.
Staying hydrated. Really, like, just all the time staying hydrated. I know it's weird, but, like, staying hydrated, that just fuels our body in general.
So, there is some thought around collagen being a really important part of your bag of water. That's a little less studied, but definitely something that we're, like, seeing.
Have you guys heard about, like, primrose oil influencing that prom?
There is a study that shows that inserting even primrose oil.
So be cautious about that.
Yeah.
But things to do if it does happen again, know that 90% of women will go into labor within 24 hours, but that's not what you will see reflected typically in hospital policies. They will tell you to come in, they will tell you 12 hours and you'll need to
be induced.
But know that what things to watch for: clear, odorless, no fever.
Yeah.
If all those things are happening,
your kick counts are going well.
Correct. Pay attention to movement. Your fetal movement's good.
And
you're likely good to stay home.
Yeah. And so in charge about preventing infection, like
checks.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Avoiding.
Well, the thing about preventing choreo is like your vagina is not a vacuum.
I was just
saying
the vacuum thing.
The vagina is not a vacuum.
Yes.
It does not suck things inside of it. And things don't get inside of it unless they're put inside of it.
Yeah.
And so I know it sounds counterintuitive because you kind of want to rush to the hospital to get the checks, but sterile gloves are not as sterile as we would be led to believe.
Even a hospital
is not exactly. So whenever you enter an environment that's not your own environment, you're going to introduce new germs, new bacteria. And every time you have a cervical check, you're inserting foreign bacteria into vagina. And so in that regard, I don't know if my guess.
Is Instagram Live going to block me for saying vagina?
I don't know.
Did you get like kicked off?
I don't know. Anyways, every time you have a cervical check, it introduces bacteria into the body. And so it would make sense that you would want less bacteria, less foreign bacteria introduced when you're in labor, when waters are broken. That would probably decrease the chances of having choreo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
I don't post them in the ocean, but like,
generally, like water bursts on the table after your water is broken, like things like that. But preventing things, all of your business. Like this, if your water has broken, this is not the time to be like being intimate and to try to get labor to move forward.
Right.
At that point, you know?
Is there a question on there?
No.
Do you have one?
Okay. It's like a question situation. So 33 weeks pregnant, baby's measuring 90s ahead, head down, and engaged in pelvis. She never had this with her previous pregnancies, and babies were both high and none in the pelvis. She's trying for me back after 2 C-section after 3 years from the last. Curious to know how soon everyone goes into labor and babies' heads engage. I want to talk about engagement and what that can mean or not mean.
Yeah,
if babies are not engaged,
arbitrary at a low,
yeah. So it's like, this isn't really a. I'm making this a question.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah.
Because there's so many people that I feel like hyper-focus, and it's totally easy to do because we are taught to hyper-focus on these things, that if our babies aren't engaged, our cervixes aren't dilated. Like, right, we're not dilated, we're not effaced, our babies aren't engaged, that we're going to have a low chance or it's not going to happen. We're 33 weeks, you know, like, and obviously her baby is engaged, but a lot of people, like,
what does things that not mean?
And what does that
mean? Like, what does their provider mean when they're saying engaged?
And what if we're 40 weeks and our baby's not engaged? Does that mean things are,
and how do they know that your baby is engaged? Like, that, okay.
Yeah, all that questions matter.
It doesn't matter. No.
And that's
you can go into labor without a baby being engaged. You can go into labor.
Yes.
Later. You can, like, go past 42 weeks with an engaged baby.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're saying engaged, like, clinically speaking, we're talking about station in your pelvis, which is measured from -5 to +5.
And the difference is literally centimeters.
Centimeters.
Like, the difference between -3 and -2 station is 1 centimeter. And I'm sorry, but that leaves a lot of
margin
for error. Look at, like, everyone's hands. They're all so different.
My hands are many centimeters.
So the thing is, you guys, there are people who literally will not have a baby engaged. Their cervix will not dilate or do anything, even come anterior, until labor begins. And so constantly hyper-focusing on where our cervix is or is not, or where baby is or is not, especially before labor even begins, is really just a...
It is defeating.
And it can
be a
stress. Yes, it's a stress-inducing thought and fear and doubt that holds back labor and doesn't release the hormones that we need to have those babies engage and the cervix dilate.
Yeah. But the same train of thought, like, we've been getting a lot of questions recently of, I'm 39 weeks, I'm 40 weeks, I'm 40 and whatever weeks, and I'm not dilated yet, and my hopes of VBAP have gone out the window. And it's like, why would you expect to be dilated if you're not having contractions? Contractions are what cause dilation. Anything before that is like,
lucky.
Cool, that's right.
It's great.
It doesn't mean that your labor will be shorter. Yeah. It doesn't. It just means that, like, okay, you're a little bit dilated, but...
Yeah.
Dilation is not a prerequisite to a successful vaginal birth.
Yes.
You don't have to be dilated.
But we hyper focus so much on it. Like, we just do. There's
you
so
be
much focus.
4 centimeters for literal weeks.
Right.
Or you could be 0 centimeters and totally closed and all the things and go into labor that night.
I remember I was going to make us a shirt when we were really into pelvic dynamics. We're going to make a shirt that said centimeters matter. Mm. And so when we said it doesn't matter, engagement matters, but it also doesn't matter. Before labor, it doesn't matter. Cervical dilation before labor, it doesn't matter. When station does matter is for certain stages of labor, you'll do different things based on what station it is. And so if the baby's engaged, you're going to want to create different movements in your pelvis to help baby descend.
So, like, if baby is high, doing something different than if you're in your mid pelvis versus low,
based on what you want to do. Do you want baby move down more? Do you want to decrease the strength of contractions? You kind of can do certain things to make them a little more comfortable. But, like, if baby's not engaged, you're in labor, you're having strong contractions, then engagement probably does matter, and you'll want to do certain things to help the baby move through into and through the pelvis. If baby's lower in, you can use Walters to help babies engage, but you don't want to use Walters when baby is lower in the pelvis than when baby's higher in the pelvis. So in that regard, centimeters do matter. in case of matters, dilation, things like that. But generally speaking, if you're not in labor, you don't have to be engaged. You don't have to be dilated. I had a client, first time mom a couple of years ago, a birth photography client, and she was a first time mom. She was walking around 6 centimeters dilated for 10 days. So as soon as labor starts, the whole team, of course, like we know, I've been a doula for 13 years. I know that it doesn't matter, right? This is the first time mom, 6 centimeters dilated. Her labor starts, everybody rushes there. We were with her for 26 hours and she got fully complete. She kind of started pushing, never really felt the urge. We ended up doing a hospital transfer and it was a C-section. But she was 6 centimeters dilated for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter. That didn't matter for her.
And the story you can tell yourself at that point is like, sweet, I'm already 6 centimeters. I've done all this work already. That means my labor is going to be shorter.
Exactly.
But your cervix is not a crystal ball.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you. It only tells you what it's doing in that moment of time. It's not a predictor of anything.
Yep. Yeah.
In fact, I actually have a comment that I, anytime I see those questions come in, I just, this is a secret wound stream. I have it just saved in my notes on my phone and it basically says exactly what we're saying. And I just copy and paste it into all of those because it's like, we see this question all the time and it's the same. The answer is the same. The answer doesn't change.
Yeah.
Dilation does not tell you when you will go into labor, how much longer you have in your labor, if your labor will or not result in a vaginal delivery. Like it's just, it doesn't.
Yeah. 100%.
Can we just show everybody our bracelets?
Oh, we got to Ashley's
daughter made these bracelets for us and it says birth matters. And they're so cute.
Yeah.
So cute.
It really is.
You can answer a couple more.
So we had a question up in I'm scrolling to look at your questions in the feedback link community, and there was someone that asked if there are any things that they need to test for or do previously to getting pregnant, and talked about things like scar and like pelvic measuring and things like that.
So I would say someone brought up a good point. This came up actually in our Q&A recently too, and where I said like, there's really not a test that's like, yes, now you're ready to get pregnant again after cesarean, like all is well. They can look for, if you're having trouble getting pregnant again, a scar defect or a niche, which can impact fertility. But overall, like it's not evidence-based that you need to go get your pelvis measured. It's not evidence-based to like try to, they can't measure the thickness of your cesarean scar when you're not pregnant. And even if when you are pregnant, like the research on that is pretty mixed.
Well, there's no way to tell, even if they do measure your pelvis, even especially before pregnancy, there's no way to know how much your pelvis is going to move and flex and how much the baby's head is going to mold to in order to fit through the pelvis anyways.
Mm-hmm. So the answer is really like, I would say there's not really a test. Someone brought up that like you can look for scar defects, which is true.
Yeah.
And those largely go undiagnosed. And mm-hmm. So that is fair. But I also think there is a level of not living in anxiety is like on the intrepidation that something is going to be wrong. Right. Like, And as a lost mom, like I get it. I went through a fertility journey myself and I get how like scary it is, or maybe you want to like preemptively do that. And often fertility is so dismissed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you have to have had this many losses before we'll even like see you in a fertility clinic. That's ridiculous. But I think that for the most part, if trying to conceive after VBAC, there's not a like stamp, you're good to go kind of test, you know?
Yeah. I think we could put a lot of our energy in a more positive way versus being the fearful of like, if I like, do I have a scar defect? This and this and this. And maybe like, focusing on connecting with the scar massage, pelvic health, like health.
Yeah,
working with our pelvic floor therapist, mentally working through our birth and the previous
birth trauma therapy
experience that we've had. Those I would suggest even more than going through a whole bunch of like tests.
Physical tests to make sure you're in an emotional place to conceive again.
Yeah. We just talked to Ashley Ward today, who's a birth trauma therapist, and her whole thing, which by the way, Wyndham Strength, she's going to be featured in our course and we're so excited about it. But her whole thing was talking about, it's not that you get over your birth trauma and you're like, ding, 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 I did it. I'm over my birth trauma. But it's about, how do you feel safe enough? How do we get you to feel safe enough to try to conceive again? how do we get you to feel safe enough to be ready to like step back into your OBGYN's office, or, you know, safe enough to feel like you're confident in interviewing providers? So I think that is really a great goal to think about as you go into preparing for another.
Yeah. I think it's just so easy as humans to focus on the negatives and the what ifs instead of like the progressive healing and the progressive positive things. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, we have a culture that's so focused on the negative. And honestly, like negative energy spreads way faster than positive energy. And it's so easy, especially because we know you have at least one kid. Right. And you're busy trying to parent. You're busy trying to live life. You're probably not sleeping a whole lot. Like, it's so easy to get caught up in those negative emotions and try and run with them and try and ask the what ifs and all of those things that it can be really hard to get your mind centered on the forward and the positive and moving through it.
Yeah. And it's also really easy, I think, now to access scary stories.
Yeah.
And then to visualize.
Yes, you
start to engage with them, and then now like all you're seeing is like really scary stuff about like people who can never get pregnant again after they had a C-section.
Yep.
And it's, you have to protect your peace.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, get a brick.
Yeah, I just got a brick device, y'all, to turn off my apps at certain times and like protect my peace, like to protect me from doom scrolling and all of those things. I think that is important. Like, how do you protect your peace and be present in that way?
Yeah.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Okay, I have one.
Hey, Chess, question.
So from our CBAC Link community, we have one asking, has anyone had the option for a VBA2C, VBAC after 2 cesareans, still choose a scheduled C-section?
Mm.
And I want to say that there's no right or wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Going for a VBAC or choosing a scheduled C-section.
Yep.
So that's first of all. And the choice is hard. It's a hard choice.
Because there's
pros and cons to, yes. Sometimes you know exactly what you want. And sometimes
it's really like,
yeah,
there are fears, there are doubts, you just don't know. And it's like this like tumble war.
And nobody can make that decision for you.
Right.
You
know? And a lot of you who have joined our community answer the questions trying to decide whether or not to VBAC. So what I would say, my advice is you can't go wrong with a VBAC supported provider. And when I look for a provider, my metric is now, are they VBAC supportive? Whether I want to go for a VBAC or not, because I feel like when a provider is supportive of a VBAC or especially VBA2C or more, that says a lot about them and how they practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so cool when a provider will offer that option to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then how empowering is that? If then you decide, okay, great. I love that I have this option. Mm-hmm. And for myself, I've decided that I want this option.
There's power in knowing that you'll be supported no matter what you
choose. Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's just thinking. Like, just knowing that you have that support sets you up for so much better experience.
And a more physiological
C-section.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes. 100%. Because being back after two C-sections is still so taboo in the hospitals right now that if you have a provider that's willing to go taboo, you know, quote unquote taboo, right, with the hospital VBAC after two C-sections, then he's going to be more likely to go taboo, quote unquote, outside of the box and accommodate a maternal centered cesarean.
Yeah. Yep. So ask for things like a doula in the OR, a birth photographer in the OR. Like, it's
so straight.
You have a lot of more options
in the OR. Milking your own cord,
not catching your own baby,
cord clumping. Catching your own baby, immediate skin to skin.
Yeah. And it's a hard choice still because a surgery is a surgery. We've talked about this too, Lily, recently on the podcast, how scheduled C-sections don't always go exactly how you think they will too.
Yeah.
So like, it's just a hard choice. Sure. There's no right or wrong.
The biggest thing I feel like with this type of question that I would personally, like if this was a friend or a doula client, I would want to have them hone in on the education and truly tuning in to what their intuition says. And we have talked about this for so long that intuition does not instill fear. So if you're feeling, if there's fear, that's probably not your intuition. And it's like, what is your first thought? What is your gut thought? And it's like, hey, I'm really feeling uncertain about this. I really feel better about a C-section. Go for the C-section and do the steps to create a better experience for that birth. If it's not.
Yeah. But then get curious about why you feel anxious about a VBA 2C.
Yes. That's
why
you might get curious.
Why are you choosing a C-section? If you feel like a VBA 2C is not safe, then ask, what does safe mean?
What does that mean?
And right? Like,
and do we know the education to confidently say it's not
safe? So maybe you could say, oh, the risk of uterine rupture goes up, but by how much? Yeah. And actually, is the absolute risk still really low? Which it is.
Yeah.
So you might be surprised.
But also, like, some people are willing to accept a 0.5% chance of uterine rupture or 1% chance of uterine rupture. And some people, that risk is too big. And that's the beauty of all of this. And that's autonomy.
And you have deciding your risk tolerance. Yeah.
And what risk you're willing to take on. Every time you get in the car, you accept a risk. That there's a risk of getting in a car crash. When you fly on an airplane, there's a risk of getting in an airplane crash. When you go to a restaurant, there's a risk of getting food poisoning. Right? Yeah. So like, what risk? Life is all about risk and risk management. And what risk are you willing to accept and trade off for other risks?
Yeah.
Choosing one path doesn't mean you're not going to have challenges or trials or struggles. And choosing an opposite path doesn't mean you'll avoid the choices or the struggles associated with that specific path. But it doesn't mean you're not going to have trials, struggles, and challenges. You're just choosing a different set.
Yeah.
You're just seeing a different set of risks, a different set of challenges, and a different potential, reward's probably not the right term, a different positive
outcome,
positive outcome, right? And so it's all about weighing what.
Do you think sometimes people struggle with that?
I do.
Having the ability to choose and wanting somebody to just tell them what to
do. Well, I also think decisive is...
It's very important.
And you have to own the choices that you make.
Yeah, you have to take radical responsibility for your own choices.
But I also
think it's empowering and also a little scary.
I also think a lot of the weight of that is due to the risks of C-sections or repeat C-sections being downplayed or not even talked about in hospitals.
Yeah.
Yes. You'll sign a consent form for days telling you all about the risks of VBAC, but there's not the risks associated with, and they give you that VBAC consent form in your second trimester, the C-section or your epidural and your C-section consent forms, all of those come when you're already in labor law land and you don't even have time to look through
that. Exactly. They make a big deal out of it.
It's a different deal. Exactly. And so this is where the responsibility comes on the parent, the person giving birth, to actually ask the questions and own the decisions, even if they're not voluntarily offered the right information.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's hard because I think doula clients or even like folks here at the VBAC like will come to us wanting to know, like, what should I do?
Yeah.
Like, here's my unique birth situation. Here's my history. What would you do or what should I do? And the answer is even if I put myself in your shoes and said, like, yeah, if I was you, I would do this.
I'm still a different person, like, at my core. I still have life experiences that have shaped me differently than yours. And so my risk tolerance might be different than yours. So even if I was in the same scenario, we could make completely different choices. And those choices might be still the right decision for us because we're different people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we've encouraged here at the Beep, I think, all along, like when we started. Like, gather as much information as you can. I love when you said, get curious. I've seen you said that before. Get curious, like, why do you feel that way?
Yeah.
Answer your questions, learn as much as you can, and then really tune into your soul and your intuition. And where is it guiding you? What is it taking you? And if you're still confused, pick a choice, pick an option, because I promise you, if you've picked the wrong option, your soul, your spirit, your energy, your essence, well, it will correct you. It will tell you, it will let you know if that's the right choice or the wrong choice. And sometimes it won't show up, like your intuition won't show up until you've already made a choice and it can confirm or correct.
For you. All right, let's do one more and then let's call it a day.
Yeah. Call it a day. A night.
And there's something.
Call it a weekend.
Weekend!
Yay, we're going into the weekend. Yeah, it's just like, what's the earliest you've had a membrane sweep? I think it'd be interesting to talk about membrane sweeps.
Yeah, we can talk about membrane sweeps. They are a form of induction.
It's an intervention. I want to avoid interventions, but you don't. When you do it, everything's an intervention. Even primrose oil, red raspberry tea.
Pumping.
All of those are interventions.
So we actually have a question. So let's talk about this.
Somebody.
Getting over the fear of birth after previous traumatic labor surgery. Can I just say, number one, you should listen to our episode with Ashley Ward. It's episode 457 of the podcast. She's a birth trauma therapist. And I think that is, like, I would love to point you to, like, someone who is a professional in this field to, like, actually speak on this. The other piece is, like, seek therapy yourself. I think so often that's hard to hear. We want the, like, what exercise can I do? What journal entry can I have?
What pill can I take?
What, like, special thing do I need to do? And, like, what song can I sing? Or, like, all those things. And the reality is like, sometimes we need to go to therapy. And sometimes we need to process and have support in order to do that. Like, trauma is a diagnosis. Like, it's a hard thing to overcome. It's not just like I stubbed my toe and I'm really processing, you know, how I tripped on that rug. Like, this is a lot of stuff to carry.
Yeah.
And it's communal work. Ashley says that a lot. Like, it's communal work. We shouldn't process it. Trauma is not something you should be processing by yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree. Like, I feel like sometimes, though, we also don't even know what traumas we have or what, like, deep down until we work with someone. And it's like, oh, I'm feeling that way because of this, because of that. Mm-hmm. It's like they're like Legos and they like pile on. And if we don't work through it, that impacts things. But then in addition to that, getting educated, because I think a lot of fear from trauma comes from information that we may have received that may not be complete. Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you like, don't know what you don't
you
know.
You don't know completely, or you've been left with like a little nugget, and then you're just left like spinning.
Creating your own narrative.
Your brain fills in the gaps with trauma. Ashley
said that. It does. It does. And I just feel like that is just like easy to, it just,
so fits. Processing, if you had a doula or your partner who was there, talk through things, piece things back together. You can do this with a therapist as well. They can help you piece things together.
Yes.
With your off reports. I mean, that kind of stuff is really hard. And like Lily was saying, don't hold that weight to do it by yourself, because that's a lot.
Yeah. Who can you trust? Who can you invite into your space? And preferably folks that have some sort of training on, like, Ashley, again, I'm quoting her, like how we hold it. Like, how do we hold birth stories? Like, we want people that are going to hold it well. Like, don't entrust your story and like try to process with someone that's not going to know how to hold your story.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe you don't process with your mom who just thinks like C-sections are the way, the only way, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have to find the safe people for us to process with.
I also think that a really important step in working through fear after trauma and experience is validation to yourself.
Mm.
I feel like sometimes we are left
feeling silly about traumas, or like there have been many times when I say something to someone and they're like, wow. Or there, I was actually
like me today.
Just kidding. I was actually at a birth that ended in a cesarean that was quite traumatic for the client. And we got back, I was went to the OR with them. We got back in and the OB came in and said, is she over it yet? Is she just ready to be happy that she has her baby?
Whoa.
And yeah. I have a lot of feelings about it. I was like, is she over it yet? Like, that was not an easy experience. And he kind of talked to her and he's a great guy, but didn't understand. And so then she started questioning herself of like,
do I even have a reason?
Am I making this up? Yeah. Do I have a reason? Am I exaggerating this? And I was like, no. Let's take this back. But validating your own feelings, because those feelings are feelings for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to validate them. And I feel like that's a huge step in healing is one, accepting that it happened and it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
It sucked. And it wasn't what you wanted. And you're mad about it and you're sad about it and you have lots of things going on. So validating that and then working through that, I think, is really, really important. Because if we don't validate ourselves, healing can be hard.
And tell your own story. Like, don't, like, again, back to people that can hold it well. But like, if I'm telling Julie my birth story and she says, oh my gosh, you must be so proud of that. That is her like telling me how I should feel about my birth instead of saying like, I'm really proud of my birth, you know?
Yeah.
So we should process in spaces where we're allowed to tell our own stories and name things about our own births. I hope you're really proud of yourself. I hope that, you should be so happy that like you just have a healthy baby, because a healthy baby is all that matters.
That's just what I think, which is kind of what I was feeling like that revival was doing. Is like,
she should be grateful that
like,
she should
be grateful. Like, are we over this now? Like,
yes.
That happened. It's like, no. You know, and so, yeah.
I think like, also fear gets a bad rap. And fear, it's really important. Fear is a tool. It's a portal into growth.
Yeah.
And fear isn't something that we just get over. I wish it was. I wish it was. But Ashley talks about how processing isn't a box to be checked. It's a practice that you refine so that when it shows up, you have the tools to help you get through it. So when these things show up in your birth, so start practicing what you do with these fears that you have during your pregnancy as these come up. So that when you get to your birth, when fear shows up, it's more of a friend in a way that allows you to show yourself how to be brave. Mm-hmm. Because courage is not the absence of fear. Showing up and doing it anyway, right?
Yeah.
When I was by maternal assisted cesarean, I was literally walking in there being like, I'm gonna, what if I choke? Don't choke. Oh my gosh, what if I please see what I mean? Like, the what ifs were there, but then what do you do with it? And because I've practiced constantly regulating myself, like, it's so normal. We're human beings, and that's just,
it's part of
how we are.
It's part of it. Like, I love that you're
saying, it's an emotion. It's a natural human emotion.
It's part of growth.
Yes.
Like, if we don't go through that portal.
Yeah.
So we're stuck. Don't be afraid of fear. We're stuck. Don't be afraid of your fear. It's okay to walk through it. I love that.
Wow.
I really think that that needs to be quoted somewhere.
Yeah. On a shirt.
Put it on a shirt.
Put it on a sticker.
That was insane.
That was
really actually, cool. You know what? I got that idea, that concept from my friend Courtney from the CBAC group who I met, who is also going to be featured in our course.
Well, Courtney.
Yes. Courtney Diabella. Shout out to you.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. She was very profound.
Well, on this note, women of strength, we are going to go to probably, we'll probably stay up. Let's be honest with ourselves.
It's just like, we're going to chit chat.
Our time is dwindling. But we love you. Thank you for tuning in on Instagram. We will put this up as a podcast episode so you can hear us talk over each other. So if you're listening to this on the podcast and you're frustrated.
That's how it's in real life too.
Yeah. But you're frustrated with how this goes and you're thinking, oh, I wish that this wasn't happening. You could tune into any other episode and this will not be all four of us sitting on a couch excited about what we're talking
about. Tune into YouTube because we're passionate. Maybe on YouTube it'll be a little better.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you'll actually like see us in real time a little bit better. But thank you for tuning in and good night.
Love you all.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community because women of strength become even stronger together.